I want to speak first and briefly, if I may, to the occasion. We are joined together for 6 weeks, St. John's in Trinity. For St. John's, it is a little bit like the experience of going off to sleepaway camp for the first time. We packed up, we got in the car, and even though it might have seemed like a great idea back when our parents suggested it to us in the spring, now we are very anxious on the going and we're not really sure it was such a great idea. But then when you get there and your parents finally leave, it all gets a lot better. And for Trinity, it must be a little bit like that guest that told you in the spring, "I'm coming for a little while. Would you mind if I stayed with you?" And at the time, it seemed like a great idea, but oh, 3 weeks of a summer guest. I hope they take regular showers. So here we all are for 6 weeks. We'll flip this experience in the middle. And what a very good day on which to start this day with this collect that talks about us being joined in a temple for the worship of God. I want you to reflect, if you will, on this one little line from the gospel that the deacon read. "Whoever welcomes a prophet in the name of a prophet will receive a prophet's reward." Prophets are a rare breed, and that is probably a very good thing for us. Prophets stir up trouble. They say uncomfortable things. They ask difficult questions. They are not the easiest people to be around. But they are not just rare for that reason. A true prophet is a rare specimen because God does not seem to make very many such people, even in an age that desperately needs prophecy. And heaven knows we live in one. True prophets are not that easy to come by. At the very least, this is another point on which our own moment and the moment in which Jesus lived and taught look a lot alike. Of course, our culture is abundant with would-be prophets. There are the televangelists, of course, and the radio talk show hosts. There are the talking heads on the Sunday morning news programs and the usual experts and the interview shows. There are the TED talkers and the big thinkers and the op-ed writers and the business school gurus for just a little time with whom people will willingly pay thousands of dollars. It seems strange to imagine, maybe. But the folks of Jesus' day felt pretty much the same with the inundation of opinion peddlers. Jesus was unique in a lot of ways, but he certainly was not unique in being regarded as a prophet. Plenty of people were regarded as prophets or miracle workers or healers, and plenty more claimed to be. The difference between that day and ours had more to do with what the stakes were in those prophecies than with the relative number of prophets per capita. In our own day, the most interesting prophecies, or at least the ones that get the most attention paid to them, are the prophecies about the stock market, about the tech industry, about oil prices or housing prices, or maybe about politics. But in Jesus' day, prophecy was much more about spiritual matters. Or if prophets dealt with worldly things at all, then it was about matters of justice and ethics. Prophets were the ones who uttered words of judgment. They didn't predict so much as they indicted, setting down the charges to be decided in the court of history. So in thinking about this little line from Matthew's gospel, it's a good idea to remember what came just before the reading we have this week from the gospel. In case you weren't in church last week, I'll just remind you, because last week's gospel was from the verses immediately before what we just heard. Here's the whole reading in context. "Whoever does not take up the cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Those who find their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it. Whoever welcomes you welcomes me, And whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me. Whoever welcomes a prophet in the name of a prophet will receive a prophet's reward. When you hear it that way, you get something of a deeper sense of what Jesus means by a prophet's reward. It is not necessarily something you would want to have. Prophets are rare, exactly because the reward for true prophecy is hardship and danger and even death. What Jesus is saying here is that when we receive true prophets into our homes, into our churches, into our lives, then we are likely going to end up sharing in their rewards as well. By aligning ourselves with them, we will expose ourselves to ridicule, persecution, derision, because those are the things that are a prophet's reward, at least in their own land and in their own time. As in the days of Jesus, plenty of people around us make the claim to be prophets. Indeed, there is a kind of fashion of the moment in the church these days to claim the mantle of prophecy by asserting that whatever we have to say is prophetic. When I do a search for the word prophetic in my email inbox, I find that pretty much every message that matches that filter has come to me from the diocese. In the profile of the diocese used in our search for a new bishop, we spoke of looking for someone who will be, here's the quote, a prophetic visionary. We have gained such a comfort with that word that we readily and quickly fly it out in front of our pronouncements as a way of legitimizing them. But it seems to me that fundamentally misses the point of how prophecy works. No true prophet claims to be a prophet. In fact, if you search through all the stories of the prophets in the Hebrew scriptures, again and again there is a story about how a true prophet is called, and it always begins with that person hearing the call and saying they cannot possibly answer it. It can't be for me. Lord, take it away. Because they are too weak, or too inarticulate, or too unknown, or whatever reason seems compelling to them. True prophets are given that distinction by others. They don't claim it for themselves. The sharp sword that divides the posers from the prophets, that separates the thousands and thousands of claimers from the precious handful of true visionaries, is the long and lingering test of history. Something else that scriptures teach us about prophets is that they are difficult, complicated, and generally deeply flawed people. Prophets are not paradigms. They are not generally role models. And one of the easiest ways of dismissing a prophet's message is by skipping the message to critique the messenger. Prophets are vivid examples of a point often lived out in the life of Jesus, that true obedience to the will of God and the law of love often looks like a lack of regard for the structures of power and the laws of society. Now, none of this is to say that there have not been prophets in our own day. There have been. They are not often in church. 45 years after his murder, we see Martin Luther King Jr. as a prophet. And it is well to remember that of the 8 white clergy leaders to whom King wrote his response in the letter from Birmingham jail, 2 of them were bishops of the Episcopal Church. Perhaps that deep mistake of history goes some way to account for our eagerness today to be thought of as prophets now. Margaret Marshall is a prophet in our day. In 2003, she was the Chief Justice of the Supreme Judicial Court of the Commonwealth, and it was from her mind that these words came. The Massachusetts Constitution affirms the dignity and equality of all individuals. It forbids the creation of second-class citizens. That was her answer in the Goodrich decision to the question of whether all people or only some people should have access to the institution and legal protections of marriage. For me, another prophet of our time is Dorothy Day, the co-founder of the Catholic Worker. She's largely forgotten today, which is all the more sad because her words and witness spoke eloquently against exactly the kind of economic inequality that is tearing apart our communities and rending our social contract. Dorothy Day knew the experience of being wildly popular and celebrated by popular culture and the next moment being abandoned by those who had flocked to her exactly because of the absolute consistency of her love for the poor and the marginalized. When it was hard to hear, they dismissed her as communist or anarchist or pacifist or some other ist they could not understand. Martin Luther King never claimed to be a prophet. He just claimed to be a preacher. Margaret Marshall never claimed to be a prophet. She just claimed to be a lawyer and a jurist. Dorothy Day never claimed to be a prophet. She just claimed to be a journalist. The power of their prophetic witness is clearer to us because we can see in retrospect the distance between the humility of their claims and the extent of their impact. And so we should be cautious in claiming the prophet's mantle. A prophet's reward, as Jesus reminds the crowd, is by no means a comfortable one. And while we may imagine ourselves prepared to accept it, that title is not a distinction for us to assert for ourselves. So for most of us, the better part of wisdom, and surely the greater part of ministry, lies in the much simpler task of discerning with prayerful clarity our own vocations and then pursuing them relentlessly, whatever they may be, in ways that will reveal God's work within us. Amen.